You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, April 23rd, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the fight over the TPP, and really, I mean, more directly, more specifically, Fast Track Authority, heats up. It's not over, folks. Not by a long shot. More on the DEA head stepping down, what it could mean for, well, first medical marijuana in this country. Also, more stories around the Clinton charities. Is there fire? Is there even smoke? Also, the Patriot Act. We're just 2 months away from its sunsetting. Will it be revised? And revived, I guess. Meanwhile, insurance companies getting worried about global warming. Also revealed a drone strike, U.S. drone strike, in January of this year on a Pakistani Al-Qaeda base. Ends up killing one American, one Italian hostage, among others. Apparently other Americans who have been on a list but not an assassination list. It was just coincidence. All that and more. Oh, we should also say Bobby Jindal is fighting hard, standing hard, standing firm against marriage equality in Louisiana. All that and more. I should just start, though, by saying yesterday was Earth Day. And just steps away from here, practically, a man named Chris Swain, 47 years old, a guy from Marblehead, Massachusetts, apparently he's either trying or did he end up swimming in the Gowanus Canal? I think he did. He had to wear like a hazmat suit. The Gowanus Canal is really polluted. It's one of the dirtiest waterways, city waterways in the world. And I think he was able to, I think they allowed him to swim. But it is a way of drawing attention to the fact that you've got one of the world's dirtiest waterways literally in view of the UN building across the East River in Manhattan. Maybe not quite. You'd have to maybe stick your head out of the UN building and look down the East River. But just good for him drawing some attention. Earth Day just does not get the attention that it used to. And I think part of that is, I don't know, is that we're sort of beyond that, sort of the idea that we spend one day a year being conscious of our environment. We may need to do a little bit more of that, particularly when you see the insurance companies getting involved in this hoax that is global warming. I haven't quite figured out what their angle is on this. How are they going to make money off this hoax? But a coalition called the Smarter, Safer Coalition, it's made up of more than 30 groups, which include some of the biggest insurance companies in the world: Alliance, Liberty Mutual, Swiss Re, USAA. And they're basically saying, they've come up with a report calling on cities in particular to get out in front of dealing with the rise in natural disasters that we are experiencing and anticipate experiencing because of global warming. Now, I just can't figure out why these guys would get so involved in the hoax. They probably, what it probably is, the CEOs of these companies and the board of directors probably sit on other boards, charities, with people who believe in this stuff. And so it's somehow, so that's, there's got to be some angle to this, right? The report writes, our current natural disaster policy framework focuses heavily on responding to disasters rather than putting protective measures in place to reduce our vulnerability to limited disasters impact. Now, of course, an insurance company would be interested in doing this because they've got to pay out a lot of times. The report, though, goes on to say the reasons for those increased disaster costs are twofold. One, the economy has grown since 1980. There's been more development, meaning there are bigger and more expensive structures to replace. And two, climate change, which is increasing the risk that bad storms will occur across the country. In this neck of the woods, on the East Coast, it's really essentially a rise in sea level. But we also, in the Northeast, have had an enormous amount of increase in heavy precipitation. In fact, across the country, it has increased in every region except for Hawaii over the past 50-some-odd years, 55 years. The Northeast and the Midwest have seen 71% and 37% increases since basically 1960. So there you have it, the insurance companies getting involved in this hoax that is global warming. So there's a slight chance we may be talking in this program. We were trying to get Bernie Sanders. He ended up he couldn't do it. I guess he was doing Tom Hartman, but I thought he did Tom Hartman on Fridays. This the fight against fast track authority is ongoing in the Senate and the House, and essentially the situation, and it's tough to get a real sense of what the state of play is. Yesterday afternoon, I guess really yesterday around this time, maybe a little bit earlier, Bernie Sanders forced a delay of the consideration of the bill that was crafted between Senator Ron Wyden and Orrin Hatch. He attempted to block the Finance Committee from being able to consider it. Essentially, what's going on here is that when you do not have the votes to defeat a bill, which I think clearly is the case in the Senate. What you want to do is you want to stall, because the more people hear about this bill, the more pressure is going to be put on their representatives. In fact, I think somebody sent an email to us yesterday, and I forgot to dig it out. But I think it was a forward from an email from Dick Morris. And Dick Morris is begun to send out emails talking about how dangerous the TPP is. Now, of course, it's written in sort of like Dick Morris-ese, where like, this is the thing that's going to destroy America. And I don't even know what, you know, I think it was, oh, the argument he was making is that it was going to prevent the American Congress from passing an immigration, you know, it was going to prevent the American Congress from denying the president the ability to provide amnesty. Some sort of bizarre thing that I don't even know that it would relate to the TPP. Nevertheless, I'll take it. In fact, I almost, like, it occurred to me, like, we should have done an Indiegogo campaign to raise enough money to buy or rent one of these right-wing email lists, both to collect their emails, maybe sign a, have them sign a petition, but also to get them to call their representatives and say, you can't give President Obama this type of unilateral authority. Apparently, Ted Cruz has gotten the message that his fundraising is going to dry up if he really goes out on a limb on this one. So all of those reliable right-wing fire breathers in the Senate who spent so much time grandstanding and reading from Sesame Street or Dr. Seuss on the Senate floor, well, they've just sort of melted away. They're perfectly okay with the president making this deal. So Bernie Sanders tries to delay it in this committee. He does not sit on the committee, but he objected to a unanimous consent request from the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to let the Finance Committee meet. Completely a procedural play. He rejected it because I guess Senate rules state that unless everyone agrees, the committee cannot meet during the legislative session. So they couldn't end up meeting until 4 p.m. that afternoon. The idea was that hopefully maybe there would be so many amendments that would have to be addressed that they would run out of time yesterday evening. They'd have to reconvene tomorrow, and the same thing would happen over again. Unfortunately, for those of us who don't want to see this trade authority pass, they were able to deal with all their work last night. They passed it through the committee. So it's going to head, I believe, at one point to the Senate floor. Now the action moves to the House. And today in the House, Sander Levin, who is the minority leader on the House Ways and Means Committee, is beginning to also consider a bill. The question in the House is, can you pass it with just Republican votes? Or will there be enough, I should say, Democratic votes to pass it with Republicans? It's unclear what the whip count is. But the Republicans are going to need at least 15 to 20 Democratic votes. Now that there is a rival Democratic bill that Nancy Pelosi is supporting, in other words, if you're one of these Democrats who are on the fence because you're generally a corporatist, but you don't want to get on the wrong side of your leadership, and you need to take a vote in favor of free trade, this Sander Levin bill may allow you to do that. But this bill, if it was sent back to the Senate, would fail because it deals with things like currency manipulation, which the other trading partners have said they don't want to get involved with. It also requires a bipartisan ad hoc committee to sign off on all the provisions that go into the final TPP. It includes stricter instructions for U.S. negotiators on labor rights and environmental protections. It requires negotiators to open up markets for U.S. automakers and agricultural exporters in ways that the other countries involved in the negotiations have already rejected. So this is essentially, hopefully, a poison pill. And now you have Pelosi essentially saying, I'm supporting this version of the bill. Now, make no mistake, it is unclear. I don't even know if it's clear if you're working in the House what's going on, frankly. It's impossible for us to know what Nancy Pelosi's agenda is here, whether there's a sense that, like, we can, if we start here with Sander Levin's, we can move it a little bit closer to the Wyden-Hatch bill and we can get what the president wants. Or maybe Pelosi is simply saying, I'm going to project that I am not against all trade deals, but I'm going to go with a version that I know will scuttle this one in terms of authority to pass it through the House and the Senate in the future. So it's very difficult to know at this point. And really, the only answer is for you to continue to call your representatives and your senators, because continued pressure will help. And again, if you are represented by a Republican lawmaker, by all means, definitely call. And there's, I mean, it's amazing to see how effectively they can shut down that right-wing rage machine and the conspiracy theorists. Because I track these emails and I've got nothing. Look at this hot air, which is the that's the what's her face, right? Michelle Malkin?
I think so, yeah.
SCOTUS's face off over ridiculous raisin law, property rights. Hillary Clinton, 2004, heterosexual marriage is fundamental bedrock principle of civilization. Dana Perino unloads on poisonous disaster for the country, Harry Reid. What America needs now is a more adult version of the Muppets. Oh, she doesn't do it anymore?
No, the Salem Media Group bought it from her, and they run townhall.com as well.
Okay, so there it is. Red State. Oh, it's Dr. Ron Paul has issued a major warning about a coming collapse of the U.S. dollar. I was going to say, I'm quite sure this is not from 7 years ago, but it is from Mike Palmer, the senior research at Stansberry Research. They've got nothing on this. Let's see. Here's Eric Erickson's Red State morning briefing. The first story is about the national insanity involved in Bruce Jenner deciding that she is a she. I kid you not. Hong Kong capitulates to the communists. No free elections. SCOTUS, rural motorists can't be held for canine searches. That's it. Nothing about this trade deal. It is stunning, the silence on the right. Stunning. I'm trying to find... Rush Limbaugh show. Hillary wants to topple herself. That's unbelievable. Don't they realize that President Obama is trying to jam this down our throats? Don't they realize that? Hot air from yesterday. Paul Ryan, it's too early to be talking about 2016. Judge grants habeas corpus to two chimps. Apparently, no one at MSNBC pays taxes. I don't know what that is. Drivers dump hybrids for SUVs. I mean, it's just Obama won't call it Armenian genocide. Yes, I would agree. That's a problem. Rick Perry, yeah, I'd probably attend a gay wedding. Now, here's one story. Obama goes to war with the left over trade. That's it. Unbelievable. So,
and how it's presented, too, it's not even trying to say what a right-wing position it would be.
Right. No,
it's just, ha-ha, left infighting, let's look and laugh. Who cares?
It's very strange. All right. Well, be that as it may, you can help by calling in. And also, you know, if you are a strong Clinton supporter, let's find out what Hillary Clinton believes about this. Everything has been just dancing around it. And they've yet to come out on a specific policy. Now, you've got Merkley, Jeff Merkley, and Representative Keith Ellison directly calling her out. Story in Politico. Capitol Hill Democrats to Hillary Clinton, get off the fence on trade. National Journal asking, how much longer can Hillary Clinton not take a firm position on trade? I mean, this is what these campaigns are about, right? You want to force Hillary Clinton to take a position. Now, what's the value of that? If Hillary Clinton, who is considered by most Democrats to be the inevitable nominee of the party, says she is against, or she is, let's say, for the Sandra Levin bill in the House, and she is against the Wyden bill in the Senate, that takes away any cover and creates a lot of pressure on every Democratic House member to support the Sandra Levin bill, which is essentially, hopefully, a poison pill. I mean, this is just the way it works. It doesn't matter if she believes it. It just matters that she comes out and says it. So continue to put pressure on your representatives. And pressure your representatives to pressure Hillary Clinton. All right. Since we're talking about the Ron Paul earlier, let's do a this is just too funny. Rand Paul, as you know, and I think, you know, we haven't talked about this, and I guess apparently this still remains the big story in Rand Paul world. Rand Paul, when he announced his presidency, or I should say his seeking the presidency, went on a couple of news hits and he has always seemed to have this problem where he, like, literally shushes women or talks over them.
Hey, wait. Shh.
Right. I mean, he does it. It's
you
weird.
Play chess?
It's like a
probably
weird,
not.
Weird tick.
Because you're limited intellect.
And look, I think the guy's been interviewed by men. I've seen him interviewed by men. You'd never see him doing that. You never see him going shush, shush, shush. And apparently it is still dogging him. I don't know if it's funders are saying, hey, you know, you clearly have a problem or what. But he is still out there having to talk about it. He went on in an interview with an Iowa talk radio host, Simon Conway. Maybe it just could be because people in Iowa are, you know, it's really, they just think it's rude in some way. I don't know. I don't even know that I've ever been to Iowa. So it could be just that, you know, they're that whole thing like, well, you know, they used to say Chris Christie wouldn't play well in Iowa because he's so rude. Maybe that's what it is. But here is Rand Paul now saying he is really, well, this is a little bit of a, like an Escher quality to this when he tries to describe why people criticizing him are actually the real misogynists.
This is the part that really made me laugh, which is was how the mainstream media went after you after your encounter with Savannah Guthrie, because I'm thinking you got Joe Biden way too touchy-feely with every woman that comes within close enough for him to actually touch. I find it really, really creepy. And all we hear from them is, ah! Uncle Joe, you quite rightly point out that Savannah Guthrie isn't asking you a question, and you're the one with a problem with women. I find it amusing. I don't know what it did to you, but it made me smile.
Well, the kind of funny thing about it is that it's kind of a sexist position to think that somehow women announcers are less capable to handle themselves than men. I don't think that. So, but everybody that was complaining about it, thinking that it had something to do with gender, basically, that's insulting to the people doing the questioning. But really, the problem is that we have a lot of media that are just so far on the left that we just don't have any neutral questions. If you go on there as a Democrat, they laugh and yuck it up and, you know, talk about how great things are going. But it's a little bit different when the Republicans are on the national news.
Oh, I feel so poorly for... What, Rand? All those Democrats go on and they yuck it up and laugh and have mimosas. Oh, would you care for another fresh strawberry?
I've never been once offered a Bellini when I've gone on CNBC or MSNBC. I think when you punch a woman in the face, some people say that's sexist. I say they're strong human beings who can take a punch. Such
that's
a double standard.
The idea that they can't, you can't shush them. That just means that people, they don't believe that they can deal with being shushed.
I know you are, but what am I? It's my basic point.
What is going on with Rand Paul? I feel like there's something else going on sort of emotionally. Like his dad probably said, like, you're not going to win.
Dad never wanted me to succeed. And I hate him. Also hate women.
I'm taking away your gold. For the weekend, Rand. You can't hold your gold. You can't come to my gold.
I remember my dad first took away my gold bars. It was one of the most humiliating, searing experiences of my life. That and having to sit next to a black person on a bus. And taking a bus. This is just a whole rabbit hole. Shh, 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 shh. Shut up. Look at you, you sneaky Jew. Getting inside my interior psychology.
There you go. There you go. I'm sorry. I'm just feasting on
the fruit plate
that the various television outlets have sent me.
You're probably also feasting on Christian baby blood as well.
Well, I dip the fresh strawberries in Christian baby blood.
So where are your horns?
Okay. I get them trimmed. I get them trimmed before I go on air.
It's right. So hard, Sam, to pretend because, you know, I've got to be around Jews for these fundraisers. And
right.
It's one thing to pretend I like Israel because that's just like, yeah, sure, whatever, kick the Arabs around, sure.
Well, but the funny thing
but
is that, I mean, Rand Paul,
room,
you know, Rand Paul wanted to cut funding, I think it was about three or four years ago.
How dare you? I think this is sort of got you questioning. That's actually the best part. It's literally like he's like, instead of doing a news interview, it's almost like he's kicking somebody under a table or something. Like shut up. I don't want people
did you see the
presidential campaign to know things that I said on mass media 4 years ago.
I rarely watch this stuff. I don't know what happened last night at, like, I don't know, 12:30 as I was noodling around for news and waiting to see if we could get any number of Congress people on about the TPP, because I really want to know what was going on in the House today. But I came across the guy who was Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr. was being interviewed on one of the press junkets. But the guy, it was a British guy, and he asked about, like, you know, how do you feel, you know, since you've been out of jail and drinking, and one or two questions. And Downey just basically walked off. And You get the feeling that, like, that's what Rand Paul is about. Like, I just want the questions where it's like, how does it feel to be traveling around in a bus? Like, is this different from going around with your dad? But then you get into the whole thing of, like, what are your positions? How come you had one position before and another one now?
The whole, like, asking about positions thing, I think, you know, I would just love to kick back in a lazy boy with Charlie Rose and talk about anything other than my positions.
All right. Speaking of positions, the support, I think I mentioned this briefly yesterday, but the support for the Affordable Care Act is, I don't know if this is the first time, certainly the first time I think since 2012, where the percentage of Americans who approve of the law is 1% higher than the percent of Americans who disapprove. It's 43% approve, 42% disapprove of it. What is interesting when you break those numbers down is that only a third of the country supports full repeal. And it turns out that among 18 to 64-year-olds, Obamacare is basically break even in terms of support. Among those, only 36% of those who are over the age of 64 view the law favorably. 46% view it unfavorably. Now, the one thing that we all know about those people at age 64 is that, or I should say over the age of age 64, is that Obamacare, it does not apply to them. They are eligible for Medicare. They are probably receiving Medicare and therefore are not eligible for any plan in the exchanges. They are not on Medicaid, theoretically. Well, they could be, but they wouldn't necessarily have gotten it through the expansion, and that's it. That, I mean, they're over 65, so they're either covered by Medicare or Medicaid, but not through the Obamacare expansion. These are people who are fundamentally not in any way affected by the law. So their problems with the law are, of course, just what they've heard and assume, I guess, is problematic about it. But relevant because of course, King v. Burwell, and which is that case that is in front of the Supreme Court that we have covered extensively on this program. A week ago, Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin was being interviewed by, I guess, a Milwaukee radio host, Jay Weber, about King v. Burwell. Listen to this exchange as to, now you understand, the King v. Burwell case is simply about the perception that if the federal government runs a state's exchange, then nobody in that exchange is eligible for subsidies. I'm not going to get into the argument about that, but just assume that's what it is. And Ron Johnson does basically address it. He says, well, the president could just pass a law or could just ask us to pass a law that says explicitly all exchanges are eligible to subsidies like they are now. Listen to this exchange. Listen to what they complain about. It's going to be the response.
You have an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal today about the GOP being prepared to react when and if a few million people can no longer afford their health insurance as a result of the King v. Burwell ruling. And I like your main point. A lot of conservatives think that that ruling in our favor on our side of the aisle would kill Obamacare. It doesn't. And we're going to be under heavy pressure to roll over to the White House and quickly fix it. And the White House is going to be proposing fixes that are that amount to passing a sentence or two of new legislation that closes up a few technicalities.
Yeah, precisely. Unfortunately, President Obama's response to an adverse decision, in other words, one that actually follows the law, would be really simple. Just a one-sentence bill allowing those subsidies to flow through federal exchanges and or offer the governors, hey, we know you got those federal exchanges. Just sign the dotted line. We'll make those established by the state.
All right, pause it.
Of course, he'll have.
Now, this also exposes why the King v. Burwell case is such a joke. Because they're arguing on a even Ron Johnson say, well, if it does, if they do, if the ruling does fall in favor, it is all based on a technicality. And it really is not much about it. And the president could just have us do a one sentence fix on this to actually have the law operate like everyone anticipated it would. All right. So just go back a couple of seconds. Let's continue.
Established by the state. And, of course, he'll have the ads all racked up with the individuals that have benefited from Obamacare on the backs of the American taxpayer. I mean, he'll have all those examples as well. So,
and the sad sack stories about who's dying from what and why they can't get their coverage. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the only way we
can. Oh, yeah. The sad sack stories about who's dying. And it's all just going to be about people dying. And we're supposed to feel bad for them because they're dying and they don't have health care. This is sort of a demented perspective. Totally sociopathic. Like, it is so unfair to us that they have all the people who are dying from the lack of healthcare coverage on their side. And we just have the people who have to pay an extra 3% on their capital gains above $250,000 on our side. It's just like when Rand Paul goes on television and doesn't get the fruit platter that all the Democrats get.
It'd be really nice if I get a Democratic fruit platter at some point, just in the nature of fairness.
But instead, all you get is the guys who have to go on TV and complain that they're paying 3% more in capital gains taxes, which is still 10, 15%. Less than they would have paid 30 years ago.
Let me guess. Instead of a nice strawberry, I'm going to have to answer a question about some whiny kid who isn't going to get their cancer medication because we're going to take away their health care.
Mm-hmm.
Wah, wah, wah.
There you go.
So ridiculously unfair. By the way, if I need to support Obamacare to become president, I will. I hate my dad.
There you go.
And I will be vindicated.
All right. We got to take a break. Head into the fun half of the program. Remember, you can support this show by becoming a member at majority.fm. You can support this program by, if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our Amazon link. Why not? At majorityreportkickback.com. Also, just a couple more days left. JustCoffee.coop is offering free shipping for one more week. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. It's justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Our Indiegogo campaign is in existence for another couple of weeks. Like I say, the newest perk we put up there, and we've already reached our goal, but we never ended up putting up this perk until just now, or yesterday, I guess it was. 5 episodes of the Cedar or Marin versus Cedar Hours or the Cedar Marin Hours. I don't even remember what we called it. but it was a video show where there were two screens. And Maron was in his kitchen in L.A., and I was in my studio upstate in the Social Security Administration building that we had rented. I kid you not. And I don't even remember what we talked about, but it was early 2008. I know Maron was mildly depressed, and I was probably mildly tormenting of him. And we were contemplating who would be the I think at this time who would be the Democratic nominee. And I haven't listened to this stuff. I don't think I've ever listened to this stuff. So I don't know. I'd be curious to just even find out what we were saying about Obama at that time and Clinton. And I don't know what other things we were talking about. But for longtime listeners or fans of Maron, and if you want to just, it also proves my point that the guy could not settle on a look. Although I had to say I had a mustache at that time. I think. But he had his long hair look. It didn't work. All right. Check it out at our Indiegogo page at themajorityreport.com. I'm going to take a quick break. We'll take your phone call, 646-257-3920. Oh, I'm just turning on the IM. Sorry about that, folks. Call your congresspeople. Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. Call your senators. Call the Heritage Foundation. Say, how could you support this? Giving President Obama all this power. So keep calling him. Important. I don't think this is over, folks. Take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.